Welcome to the Ripped Body Podcast. I'm Andy Morgan. I'm joined by Matt.
Hey, everyone.
Today's another Q&A Friday, and let's get stuck in. Love this one. Love this one. It came in this morning just as we were about to record. All right, here we go. I was having some beers with some buddies the other night, and we were discussing which people in the fitness industry we would love to throw on the fire. Who would that be for you?
Oh, man. This is a great, I need to think about this one for a minute.
So my fitness feed, I subscribe to certain newsletters and research reviews, and I curate my social media to purposefully avoid fitness industry shitheads. However, I do have an awareness of who they are because I follow people who do quite a lot of debunking. And so I do come across people, and then there's probably three people a day that I just want to throw on the fire. but one that's come up recently is this guy, Brian Johnson. Have you heard of him?
I have. Yeah.
The guy who was like, he had some kind of big tech exit that was close to a billion. And he's saying that which is totally unrelated to fitness and health, I think. And he's saying that basically he's branding himself as the man that is spending millions on himself per year to track every biomarker possible and improve his health. And he's doing this for you, us, the common people. And yeah, you've mm-hmm. seen this, yeah?
I've seen it, yeah.
So the problem is that this guy is not an expert in health and fitness, right? And yet, essentially what he's been doing is waving fat stacks of cash around and asking around to see who is the expert in skin health, in vision, in, right, etc. And what's then happening is he's getting, instead of the average scientific consensus voice on each individual subject, he's going to have those people who are marketing themselves as cutting edge mm-hmm. and really expensive come forward and sell themselves to him. He's going to end up going for those people, unfortunately, more often than not, because of their great branding.
Right.
And that's because he doesn't have the ability to choose or to know which doctors are best, which are most knowledgeable in those specific areas. It's almost like, let's say, climate change, for example, right? Say 99% of climate change experts agree that we are impacting that we are causing climate change and global warming. And then 1% won't. Well, who gets famous there? The 1%. He's kind of ends up going for these famous people. And then almost by default, these famous people tend to be those who are either wrong, or they're very confidently following immature science. And so then he's putting out this blueprint for everyone to, oh, it's free, it's for everyone to follow. He announced on Twitter, by the way, yesterday that he's started formulating a product, which of course was always course, going to happen.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. He's built up this massive following over a year, but that was of course going to happen. And it's just... It's silly. It's absolutely silly. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, man, I don't know. That whole idea, I don't like throwing people on the fire, but that whole blueprint, I'll throw that on the fire every day. Any thought, anyone?
I think for me, this is not necessarily people in the fitness industry, but fitness adjacent. I get so many friend requests and LinkedIn requests from business coaches, I guess they're called. I don't know if you get these and their bios will be like, oh, scale your business to 20K. I don't even really actively post on social media, and I still get DMs all the time where they just like, oh, hey, how's your coaching going? And they try to sell you something. I just find that super annoying. If that could stop, I'd be happy.
How often do you get that? Because I was having a rant about this on a Japanese team meeting yesterday for like 10 minutes at the start of our meeting. I just exploded. Because when I start, I just can't stop. And I try not to like capture it on the mic or an email or whatever. But man, go on. How often is that happening to you? And what's their approach?
Probably a few days a week. So the first time I got a message, it was a DM, and it was like, hey, are you accepting new coaching clients? So I thought, oh, cool. Someone wants to be a client. And then we started talking, and they were like, well, I'm actually not looking for help, but if you still have room, I can help you grow your business. And it comes across like that.
I mean, every day I'll have like three people in the DMs, and some of them are like fake, obvious, like very pretty women trying to sell affiliate deals, promotions. Mm-hmm. They want to sponsor me to, I know, some kind of supplement thing. And then there's also the sales, the coaching sales thing, right? Or there's the copywriter, people sliding into the DMs and essentially saying, yeah, I can write better than you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I understand copywriting is a legit profession, but it's almost like you have one marketing professional right now who's trying to teach everyone how they should market to people, and they're all doing the same strategy. So yep. It tends to be follow, like a few posts, comment on one, say, hey, I sent you a DM. In the DMs, like, hey, I love what you're doing. One of the ones I'm thinking of yesterday said, I look forward to seeing value from your emails. I just subscribed. Okay, value. Value is something that a marketer uses, not someone who's looking for help with like fat loss or muscle growth. And then sure enough, I see an email later that day from a person with the same name. Hey, I've been subscribed for a while. Oh, really? I look up their email address. No, you haven't, right? Do you have like a 10... email sequence that warms people up and gets them ready to buy your coaching?
And it's, yep.
Dude, I have a 7-day email sequence literally that helps people to troubleshoot their nutrition setup. Like, this is the entire branding on the website. It's how I get people's email addresses, and I try to absolutely, absolutely over deliver on value for them so that they love the brand and trust us. And then hopefully one day they decide, yeah, maybe we'll hire them for coaching or buy a book. Happy days. Let's say that we help 999 people for free just through the beauty of the internet and the fact that we're able to, do that just by putting information out there, and one person out of those 1,000 hires us. It's probably a ratio or something like that, right? I mean, I think that's absolutely wonderful. So these people mm-hmm. coming in and they're trying to tell us like, yeah, you should use this specific marketing funnel. I just find it pretty sickening, especially when they start off on a lie. Another one is, oh, hey, I've put together a 10-minute Loom video proposal for you of how you could improve your coaching page writing, right? And it's like,
yeah,
no, you haven't. You've just sent this to 100 different people, and then you're going to see who bites. You're on a fishing expedition, mate. So you're starting off the relationship with a lie. And I just want to grab them through the screen and slap them around and just be like, listen, man, you're just a fake. You are, I'm getting angry now. You're just a fake. You are starting off these relationships with fakeness. I can't trust you because you started off with a lie. Just be genuine, like, for fuck's sake. Anyway, like, but of course, you can't respond, because if you respond, then you become the asshole. So it's just immediate block, like immediate block. Anyway, so should we get on to the next question? I love this question, by the way.
All right, next question. Hi, Andy and Matt. It's been a while, and I hope all is well with you. I remain an avid reader and consumer of your content, by far the best on the web. I'm writing to ask a question that I suspect I am not the only one to have asked, and I just haven't found the right answer, meaning something that works. In short, I am your target client. I'm a busy executive. I have 4 kids, travel, etc. I am on the margin, a very disciplined person. I rarely miss a workout. In fact, I really enjoy training. Where I fail, and this is the part you have probably heard, is the diet. I know what to do. I know how to track. I know that it takes time, but I always sabotage the diet after a few days, and then I feel like I'm starting over. Despite a very dedicated workout routine, I am the same as I was. The gremlin strikes me when I get home from work or being on the road. If there is a cookie, a pretzel, a chip, and I eat one, I am unable to stop and binge eat. What's more frustrating is that it seems like a single binge leads to a few days of poor choices that ends up really frustrating me until I feel like I can get back on track, and then it happens all over again. I would be happy to use your coaching, but candidly, until I can go a few weeks without falling off, I'm not sure it will help. Do you have some content on this particular topic? If you do, I would love a link or a recommendation. I know you are busy, so thank you in advance for any considerations. David.
All right. I love this. Yeah, I do have a link. Rootbody.com, food environment. I'm Googling this right now because I can't remember the URL. How to manage your food environment to make dieting easier. Yeah, okay. So it's rootbody.com/mindless-eating. This is the article that I'd recommend to you. It's by a friend, Patrick Umphrey, who's a great coach. I've also, you know, kind of written some parts in this as well. It's kind of a collaboration. And it's talking about organizing your food environment so that you can to set yourself up for success. So there are really two parts to this. I think number one, it sounds to me like you're starting off your diets too strictly. And so then you're coming home and you're hungry and you are almost pushed into snacking. I don't like the way that I phrase that because it removes self-responsibility. But when you're super, super hungry and stressed, for some people, the stress on top of that, it can just be a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
If you have organized your food environment so that you don't have those snacks in the house, you don't have the cookies, you don't have the chips. Or if you do have them, they're hidden away. They're on like a top shelf or a bottom shelf at the back of the cabinet. You have to walk past a bowl of fruit to get there. That can be very helpful. You've said that you've got 4 kids, right? I've talked about this in a pod before. You could weaponize your kids against you, where if they see daddy snacking, then, right, they get, I don't know, extra playtime, or I don't know. It obviously depends on how old they are, right? Something that is going to help gamify this and keep you on track. Because obviously removing all of those snacks from the house, come to think about it, just isn't going to work at all. But hiding the stuff away and making sure you're called out on that. So I think the other thing, you've mentioned that when you're on the road, if there's a cookie, a pretzel, a chip, you eat one, then you're unable to stop and binge. If there's a gun to your head, would you still do it? No. Right? You need to, I think, take a step back and take responsibility here and just tell yourself that, no, you can do it. The easy thing to do is to just snack. You're perfectly capable of not snacking and you are making a choice. So take that responsibility. And if you know that one is going to lead to eating many, then the answer is not moderation, it's elimination. So the rule that you have for yourself is, I don't snack. Mm-hmm. That's your new identity. You put it on a post-it note, you put it on the bathroom mirror. You put it on another post-it note when you travel and put that on your bathroom mirror in your hotel room. And then you just need to be an adult about it. Now, obviously, that's going to be a lot easier if you don't starve yourself when you start dieting. You just make small changes. You have a modest calorie deficit, right? You have sensible rules for yourself. It's not just immediately going to 2 chicken breasts with green lettuce each day, yeah. Right? Can you think of anything further, Matt?
What stuck out to me is what you said about moderating versus just eliminating or abstaining. I think it's good to have that awareness of yourself and just be honest with yourself. I think a lot of times if you're tracking macros and doing like flexible dieting, people really want to include their favorite little treats. Mm. But if you know that it's like a trigger food for you and you can't stop, like maybe just don't eat it, you know? I've had that happen a lot with clients where they're like, oh, with these macros, I can fit in a little bit of ice cream every night. And like, you can, but if then every night it's this huge struggle to try and stop yourself, it's probably better to just skip it. And some people can eat like one cookie and then they're good and it satisfies them. But some people, it just like flips a switch and they can't stop. So I think it's good to be very aware of what those foods are for you. Probably just don't eat them.
That's a great point. Yep. Mm. All right. Well, I hope that helps, David. And let us know. All right. That's the pod for this week. Thank you for listening. We will catch you on Tuesday.
Peace.